Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy morning show for you today with all sorts of stories, including one about the Burdett Birth Center in Troy, which the hospital there wants to close, which would eliminate any birthing services in Rensselaer County after Columbia Memorial Hospital in Hudson eliminated all birthing services in Hudson in 2019. Greene County hasn't had birthing services in many years before that. We'll hear a recent rally in Rensselaer County to keep the Burdett Birth Center open. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather, the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show.
This is Somi, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, hands-on creative community radio for Greene and Columbia County.
There are so many things to do in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, including on Saturday, August 19th, from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., it's time for the Deep in the Valley 2023 Festival. Raven Sings the Blues presents a second year of Psych Jam experimental country and folk bands performing, this year with Riley Walker, $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, The Weeping Bong Band, Gold Dust, Ned Collette, and Gliders performing. That's at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook on Saturday, August 19th, the Deep in the Valley Festival. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stuart Summer of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, July 21st. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Joshua Solomon reports for the Times Union that with few businesses or communities willing to build new, much-needed affordable housing, Governor Kathy Hochul wants to turn the former downstate correctional facility in Fishkill in Dutchess County into a residential development. Developers could get up to $8 million in state grants to turn the 80-acre site from a maximum security facility with space for 1,200 inmates into a housing development with at least 20% affordable housing units. The site is near a retail distribution center for Gap, Incorporated, a minor league baseball stadium, and a semiconductor business. Fishkill is 4 miles north of Beacon and 14 miles south of Poughkeepsie, where there are Metro North Railroad stops. New York began taking bids from developers on July 20th. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Mid-Hudson News reports that after a Wall Street Journal story said hundreds of communities across the country, including Wappinger Falls and Dutchess County, have lead telecommunications cables leaching into the ground, Congressperson Pat Ryan and Governor Kathy Hochul are upset. Both are demanding telecommunications companies remove lead cables from around the country. Ryan, who represents the 18th Congressional District, has written to the CEOs of Verizon, AT&T, and U.S. Telecom, requesting they remove the toxic lead cables. In Wappinger's Falls, one lead cable runs along the perimeter of a children's playground and basketball court. The Environmental Protection Agency recommends that children avoid soil containing more than 400 parts of lead per million, but samples taken on the local playground tested at 850 parts per million. Hochul has ordered an investigation into the issue and closed the Wappinger Falls Park while the soil there goes under further testing. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that many Republicans in the state legislature want to ban smoking cannabis in public places in New York after 2 years of legalization with few stores open for sales. State Senator George Borrello said, quote, state residents, including children, are now regularly assailed with the pungent odor of marijuana on public sidewalks and parking lots and other public spaces. Many New Yorkers don't want to be exposed to either the effects of marijuana smoke or its smell and don't want their children subjected to it, unquote. State cannabis regulators announced a process this week to sell cannabis at large events and festivals as they get continued criticism for the slow rollout of stores. Republicans want to fine folks smoking cannabis in public up to $125. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, July 21st. Local early morning temperatures range from 61 degrees in Tannersville to 71 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 72 degrees. Pollen levels for today have cratered. Sensors are showing minimal levels today and this weekend should only make it into low territory. Trees and ragweed are done for now, just grasses will be popping up. Air quality will be good today. Smoke should be not present at ground levels. This morning, a traditional wall of rain passes from west to east. Some people may be woken up by a bang of thunder. Midday will have a lull in precipitation, and some people could even see spots of blue sky, but don't be swayed. After a brief high temperature of 80 degrees at 3 p.m., then both the temperature and rain drop, looking heaviest around 6 p.m. Some places could see thunder, damaging winds, and hail. Rain should end for all by midnight, but around 10 p.m. it should be comfortable enough for most to switch from air conditioning to cool outside air. It will dip to 60 degrees overnight. Then, Saturday will be, well, pretty darn nice. Most of the day will be very comfortable with partly cloudy skies and a high of 82 at 6 p.m. Then, get this, 58 comfortable sleeping degrees overnight takes us into a sunnier and warmer Sunday with a high of 84. Monday, temperatures still looking up, but not the dew points. A high of 86 is possible, along with afternoon rain. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:06 a.m., high tide at 5:56 a.m., low tide at 12:47 p.m., then high tide once again at 6:48 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:34 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have dropped to 5%. A weak Hadouken hit yesterday, and though it didn't do much, but if it weakened our magnetosphere enough, today's coronal mass ejection may do some damage. Check out the Better Weather Telegram channel or NOAA.gov for more info. Plasma winds will be slow at 399 kilometers per second with an average density of 8 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are low chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 131. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate, who remind you, yeah, everything is getting real hot, but you know what's cool? Your neighbors and the chorus of honesty coming out of your speaker. That means all the cool kids like to chill at WGXC.org. Lots of community stuff to find there, and don't forget that donate button. Sustaining supporters are just the coolest.
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
We'll be right back. Herbie Hancock with Spanka Lee on WGXC.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I can't help but believe that this is just another episode in a long-standing campaign of intimidation and a harassment of the Supreme Court and its members.
Republican Texas Senator John Cornyn opposes Democrats pushing for a more stringent ethics code for Supreme Court justices. It's become a hot-button issue following revelations of travel by Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito and Justice Sonia Sotomayor's book sales. The Senate Judiciary Committee advanced a bill along party lines. Senate Judiciary Chair Dick Durbin said it's a first step to restore confidence in the court.
Historians and legal scholars from across the political spectrum agree that legislation imposing a code of conduct on the Supreme Court is both necessary and well within Congress's congressional authority.
The measure now heads to the Senate floor. Democratic presidential hopeful Robert F. Kennedy Jr. spoke before Congress Thursday and denied making racist or anti-Semitic comments, despite a video in which he claimed the COVID-19 virus was targeted to attack Caucasians and blacks disproportionately, while Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese individuals were more immune.
In my entire life, I have never uttered a phrase that was either racist or anti-Semitic.
President Joe Biden used video clips of Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who compared him to Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon B. Johnson, to promote his campaign online. Biden, who was in Philadelphia Thursday to promote clean energy jobs, cracked a joke about Greene.
Said Biden is doing things like Roosevelt, and it goes on the line as if in creating these jobs, and he thinks that. I never had an endorsement from him before.
As former President Donald Trump's legal woes deepen, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has reportedly promised to expunge former President Donald Trump's impeachments in exchange for not endorsing his campaign, according to Politico. Sources told the publication a vote could come before the August recess. The speaker has reportedly denied making such a promise. Finally, education officials in Florida have approved new standards to teach students about African American history. Other lessons will touch on acts of violence perpetrated against and by African Americans. Florida Commissioner of Education Manny Diaz pushed back against claims the new standards censor history.
And if anyone takes the time to actually look at the standards, you can see that everything is covered from elementary school, where we start talking about those who have been prominent African Americans. And as age appropriate, we go into some of the tougher subjects.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our ATRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While former President Donald Trump awaits a likely indictment for his role in the attempt to overturn the 2020 election, we're in Michigan, where two related cases involving alleged fake electors and voting machine tampering are moving forward. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel charged 16 fake electors who Nessel said in a statement were part of a, quote, organized effort to circumvent the lawfully cast ballots of millions of Michigan voters in a presidential election. The alleged participants are charged with one or more counts of conspiracy to commit forgery, election law forgery, and other felonies. The Michigan Advance reports that those charged include the co-chair of the Michigan GOP, the mayor of Wyoming, Michigan, a co-founder of the Michigan Conservative Coalition, and several county and state candidates and committee members. The false documents were allegedly signed in the basement of the Michigan GOP headquarters before being submitted to the U.S. Senate and National Archives as genuine. Bridge Michigan reports that on July 12th, an Oakland County judge ruled that a special prosecutor may move forward with a voting machine tampering case involving a 2022 candidate for Michigan Attorney General, Matt DiPerno, a former state representative, and others. The suspects allegedly took Dominion ballot tabulating machines to a hotel room to find evidence of voter fraud. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Irish Arts Week has been happening in East Durham all week, with all sorts of musicians giving workshops and performances and jam sessions and more. Tony Fallon was in East Durham last night at the Shamrock House and recorded a little of the sounds there that he will feature on his Sunday the Irish show. Here's a little sample.
Okay, hi, we're here in the Shamrock in East Durham. and there's a ceilidh on tonight, which means there'll be a lot of music and a lot of fun. They're going to be dancing in very, very soon.
Just in time.
Good, yeah, we just came in time for this dance. Now, this is set dancing.
Turn the lady under. First top, first inside. Leave the lady off between the couple on your left. Pick up the new lady. Drop the lady off. New lady. Drop the lady. Pick up the new lady. Everybody, here's your partner. Swing. First time, eyes nearly high. Leave the lady off. Pick up a new lady. Leave the lady. Everybody swing, all swing. Second top, eyes on the inside. Leave the lady on your left. Pick up the new lady. Leave the lady off. New lady. Drop the lady off. And again. Everybody swing. Second side. Out. Bring all the ladies home. So you're leaving them back at home. New lady. Your own partner. Everybody should be back home now. Swing. And everybody, out to finish. Come on, let's hear it.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Keep Burdette open! Keep Burdette open! Keep Burdette open!
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining with us here today at the Empire State Plaza. We are here to save Burdette Birth Center, and we will hear from a number of folks from around the Capital Region. Danetta Graham, she is the Vice President of Education and Corporate Compliance for Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, and also a community member who recently gave birth at Burdette Birth Center.
I'm here today as a Black mother. Yes. That's my role here today. As a Black mother who lived in Rensselaer County, who has education in public health, who understands maternal health outcomes, who understands public health and disparities. When I decided to have my child, the first thing I thought about was where was I gonna have her? Mm-hmm. What was gonna be my birth experience, right? And I did the research in the Capital Region, and Burdette Birth Center stood out by far. I actually had the opportunity to take a tour before I went in to have my daughter, and I was greeted with nothing but kindness, with compassion. I felt seen. I felt heard, which is not something a lot of Black mothers can say. I had an amazing experience before I had my daughter and during my delivery. 3 o'clock in the morning with no warning, right? I went into labor. I went down the street. Thank God I went down the street to have my daughter at Burdette Birth Center. My doctor was there. The nurses greeted me. I had a very low risk of pregnancy, but during labor, my blood pressure shot up so high they thought I was going to have a stroke. And at that time, instead of just jumping in and making decisions for me, telling me what to do and how to do it, I felt like I was in partnership with the staff at Burdette Birth Center. Yes. During the entire time, they let me know what was happening to me, what was happening to my body. They gave me options as far as my delivery, and I actually chose to have a cesarean section. And I'm glad that I did it. I never felt so understood, so valued in a space like that where you are, talk about being vulnerable when you're in labor, trying to get a person out of your body. There's nothing in the world that's more important than feeling safe and feeling seen. And I had that experience. And in the days after my labor, when I was in the hospital and I was visited by lactation specialists, I was visited by mental health specialists, it would be a shame, a travesty, devastating to close Burdette Birth Center. And the people who have always paid for these decisions will be the same people who pay. Brown women, Black women, low-income people will pay again. Mm-hmm. It's a mistake. Let's just do the right thing.
Next, we'll hear from Tisha Graham. Tisha has been active in birth and midwifery politics for more than 3 decades. She's the co-founder and board member of BirthNet, state coordinator of New York Friends of Midwives. She's a certified professional midwife, certified doula, certified childbirth educator, and certified lactation counselor. She has attended hundreds of births at Burdette Birth Center.
Yes.
Closing the Burdette Birth Center is a travesty. It is unethical. It is unconscionable. And it is unsubstantiated by the center's stellar statistics. It is a clear and conscious move with one goal in mind, to hold profits over people.
Yes.
We stand here today outside of the Department of Health to say, hell no. Why close the only birthing facility in Rensselaer County, which serves the most economically vulnerable of populations, who are respectfully cared for by midwives, practicing the evidence-based model that results in the best outcomes? Why close that of all facilities? You know why? Because birth outcomes, good birth outcomes, don't make large health conglomerates rich. Because ridiculously low surgical birth rates, which increase the overall health and well-being of birthing families and babies, don't make large health conglomerates rich. Because folks birthing in tubs of water with their partners and their doulas at their side don't make health conglomerates rich. Most importantly, this midwifery model of care reduces medical interventions and procedures that put birthing people and their babies at risk for maternal and infant mortality and morbidity. Black and brown birthing people in particular, the majority of birthing families in Troy, who Burdette largely serves, are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in childbirth, and their babies 4 to 6 more times likely to die in their first year. Why do we need Burdette birthing centers to stay open? Because midwives save lives. Say it with me,
say
everybody.
It again. Midwives save lives.
Once more,
midwives save lives.
To announce the slated closure of the Burdette Birth Center 2 days before the law would require a health equity impact assessment from St. Peter's Health Group, which would legally mandate community engagement and feedback from those same families and providers that this outstanding birth facility serves, is sleazy and is disgusting. They don't want community involvement. They don't want community feedback. Well, we're involved now. And we are not backing down until the Department of Health makes the decision to keep the Burdette Birth Center open.
We will hear from New York State Assemblymember John McDonald. Thanks so much.
Good afternoon, everybody, and it's great to be here with such a broad coalition of our community. We have a bipartisan, bicameral, multi-government effort. Elected officials on both sides of the aisle focusing on pushing back on what Trinity Health has proposed to close the Burdette Bird Center. I have to be honest with you, I never in my career as an elected official of 24 years did I think I would be standing battling with a Catholic-based organization to keep birthing center in a community. The elected officials have been meeting with Trinity to at least understand where they're coming from. And to be clear, hospitals are struggling in certain aspects. And that's why in this past year's budget, the legislature responded. We increased Medicaid rates 7% across the board for all services. At the federal government, our federal partners, thanks to Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, Congressman Tonko, have finally won the battle to increase the Medicare rates overall to go by being reimbursed 85 cents for every dollar to $1.22 every dollar as of October 1st of this coming year. And thirdly, as you know, resettlement of Medicaid recipients, where about a million recipients will probably move into the Essential Plan. I explain that for a reason. The Essential Plan actually mimics a commercial plan in regards to reimbursement. And therefore, when Trinity complains, inaccurately I may state, that they only get $2,925 for natural birth, when in reality they get $3,300, they will probably receive a 60% increase for every individual in a commercial plan. My point in saying those three items is that as much as the hospitals have struggled over the years, help is not only on the way, help is now in place. And I firmly believe that this decision by Trinity has not been well thought out and is way, way too premature. As in the course of our conversation, listening to Trinity, we expressed, whether it was the mayor of the city of Troy, the county executive of Rensselaer County, the senator, assembly member that I share Rensselaer County with, we expressed our concerns about the fact that our babies don't usually wait for an appointment to be born.
Right.
It is an urgent matter.
Yes.
And the response initially was, well, we're going to rely on a typical Medicaid transport system, of which all of us responded with a totally adequate no way.
No way.
The mayor of Troy and a county executive reminded Trinity, and as of this morning, the Department of Health, that the EMS system is tremendously overburdened. Mm-hmm. So we're putting individuals who arguably need attention at the greatest time in a very bad situation. But what aggravates me the most, when we talked about the great care provided for the midwifery service at Burdette, they said, no problem. We got a grant 2 years ago, and we're building the same replica in Albany. From my perspective, this has been a concerted effort for 2 years to remove birthing services from Rensselaer County, the city of Troy, and it's totally unacceptable. This morning, members of the county executive, the mayor of Troy, Senator Ashby, Member Bendett, Member Fahey, we met in the commissioner's office of health. We met with Commissioner McDonald and his leadership team, of which there are many individuals from all different components. And I want to share with you what we heard today, because I've already shared with you what we've said. We heard this is the beginning of the process. The process is not a fait accompli by any stretch of the imagination. Trinity will be required to do the health equity assessment that they thought they may not have to do. Probably the most important message that came out of this meeting. This is a message that we need to repeat to everybody. Number one, the Department of Health has been deluged, just like my office and every other elected official's office, of letters of opposition. And we need to keep that up. The reality is this. This closing is not a fait accompli. We need to keep up our voices, our advocacy. We need to keep fighting to keep the Burdette Center open. Thank you.
My name is Nautica Miller and Mady. My pronouns are she and her.
My name's Lakin Veely. She, her pronouns.
My name is Gabrielle Billard.
Great. Thank you for coming on to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. You're part of the group of the Stockbridge Munsee youth who are coming from Wisconsin to visit what we now consider Troy, New York.
Yeah.
Yes.
What has your impression been?
I feel, like, really good, and it's, like, making me, like when I, like, grow up and stuff, and I, like, want to come back and learn, like, lots more, and it's, like, really happy to, like, come to our land and stuff and, like, explore all over the place. Yeah.
So basically, you just missed this place.
Greylock and, yeah, the mountains, and it was really cool.
Is it a different feeling visiting here and liking it than someplace else where it's you like?
Yes, it is completely different.
Here is, like, really good. Yeah.
From the reservation that we live on and then here in New York, it can't believe we used to live here. Because where we live now,
it's, like,
not good.
Not really good. There's always
police everywhere.
Kids getting kidnapped, getting killed, especially natives. Also, and, like, women getting killed by, like, white men coming on a reservation. It's, like, really not good right now. And, yeah.
So do you feel safer here than you do at home?
Yeah, but it's, like, my family's, like, all back in, like, Stockbridge, Kashina and stuff. So, like, yeah. Like, also really happy to go back home. But I also want to stay here, too.
Hmm.
I would say the same thing, too. I would prefer it here than where I am living right now.
Yeah.
Gotta agree with that.
So what are some of the things that you've done here that were really important in this experience?
I collected rocks or quartz.
We, like, collected crystals, what she said, too.
Quartz
and rocks. And we explored that one place. I forgot what it's
called. Healing Springs.
Yeah. And, yeah.
It is fun since we've been here. We've been to the Healing Springs. We've been to a mountain.
Greylock.
Oh, Greylock Mountain. We've done a lot of fun things. I wish I could stay longer, but I can't.
So, we went to this. It's not that place that we already talked about, but it's, like, graves and stuff about these people who died during the, like, war and stuff, and it was really cool to learn about that.
Hmm. So through this experience, having been back to your ancestral lands and having elders around you who have not been here, what are some lessons that you're taking from this journey that you're going to bring back to your home in Wisconsin on the reservation?
So, talking about, like, the schools that they used to have, like, if you used to do anything about your culture, you used to get hit, that we can definitely see that on the reservation a lot, because I used to get hit for no reason, because my dad used to get hit, so it kind of was like, kind of like, just goes through, I believe.
So, like, same thing with what she said about, like, her getting, like, hit for, like, no reason. But also in, like, boarding schools, like, how our ancestors used to go there. Like, they couldn't, like, speak their language. They had to, like, learn how to, like, speak, like, in how we talk right now. And, like, they had to get used to it because ancestors of ours used to, like, talk their own language. That's why we talk, like English right now.
Do you want?
I was going to say the same thing they said, except one thing they probably forgot or something else was that they were forced to go there.
They were taken out of their homes at, like, 4.
And then they would stay there till they're 18 or something.
Yeah.
And so how has coming here changed, given you a different perspective, or have you learned anything? Or are you saying that you only learned that in this last week?
We've learned a lot of different things. Some of these roads that we have now were like before, like they had these roads, they were like paths that the natives took. So they took those, turned them into roads and whatnot. And they did a lot of stuff and got rid of all that. You can barely tell that they were even there at one point.
From all of the things that you've learned, what are some really important lessons that you want to make sure that the next generation understands? What is some of that knowledge that you think is really important to pass on?
Maybe. For them to know that Wisconsin really isn't their home, from New York. And hopefully they get to come out here one day and learn the stuff that we did.
Or else we take them. Because, like, we had just like Sean and Winona did. We could probably be the ones to take them, teach them all this stuff.
And just pass it on and pass it on.
Yep. Be like, oh, old man Sean or old woman Nona.
And you'll know so much more then. What I hear, what I've heard this afternoon at Freedom Square was learning, understanding the river and how it heals, and that we need to stop polluting it so that it can heal itself and heal us. What are some important messages that you think non-Indigenous people need to understand for a better future?
Not everything was theirs, and they can't just do whatever they want.
The fact that colonists came in and just took when things were not to be taken, but also people were living on those lands. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
How do you feel like your generation is making a big difference? You were talking about intergenerational trauma. What do you think the role of your generation is?
It's a lot different because normally you used to see kids outside and whatnot. You don't, because now all these electronics are on those, so they don't really learn much because they're always on, like, electronics and whatnot. So they don't actually figure out a lot of stuff about their culture and whatnot.
Unless they look it up. Or unless
you think they will?
Some people will. You wouldn't know that, though. I have.
So the internet has allowed you to learn a little bit about your culture?
Yeah. I mean, there's a museum next to where me and Nautica live. Like, two.
The library.
Yeah, the library. Yeah. And they'd be like, sometimes I look up, things about our culture and stuff. And then, of course, animals. But mostly our culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank the three of you for coming on to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Do you want to leave us with any hopes for the future?
Hopefully the Hudson River is cleaner. Eventually people can swim in it.
Basically the ocean, in fact, anything.
Especially
And hopefully more people come back here.
And especially people throwing plastic there. It's lots of plastic in the water. And yeah. So that they don't keep on littering in the ocean.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Adam Reese and Rebecca Shabbat report for NBC News that after former President Donald Trump announced earlier this week that he got a letter saying he will likely be indicted for his role in the January 6th insurrection, he called Representative Elise Stefanik. Trump called House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and Stefanik, who represents the 21st Congressional District in New York, including Rensselaer County, and asked them to rally support from House members. Stefanik has endorsed Trump for his re-election campaign. After the call from Trump, Stefanik said, and I quote, "We have yet again another example of Joe Biden's weaponized Department of Justice targeting his top political opponent, Donald Trump," end quote. Read more about this story at the NBC News website. H. Rose Snyder reports in the Times Union that after a few days of sunshine, there is another flood watch issued for the area on July 21st, as more showers and thunderstorms are expected in the area. The flood watch is from noon Friday until 2 a.m. Saturday. Kevin Lipton, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Albany, said 1 to 3 inches of rain could fall. Local downpours could cause flooding situations. That happened on July 18th when 5,000 Albany County residents lost power after severe but brief afternoon storms passed through the area. There might be a few more showers Saturday, but then Lipton says, and I quote, "We'll at least have a two-day period where we won't have to worry about significant flooding issues," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Porcupine Soup reports that the First Reformed Church in Athens is getting a $6,000 grant from the New York Landmarks Conservancy to help fund fascia and gutter repairs. Peg Breen, president of the New York Landmarks Conservancy, said, and I quote, "Our grants help maintain historic religious institutions that often anchor their communities. Our recent grantees have food, cultural, and outreach programs that reach well beyond their congregations," end quote. The First Reformed Church of Athens was built between 1825 and 1826. The church is active with a congregation of 350 and hosts the Hudson River Handbell Concert and the Athens and Coxsackie Community Band's annual Christmas concert, classical music concerts, and the annual Halloween Haunted House Tour. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
A proposed New York bill aims to end state funding for so-called charities supporting Israeli settlements. The Not On Our Dime Act aims to end support for not-for-profit groups engaging in unauthorized support of Israeli settlement activity. In New York, the Central Fund of Israel receives $50 million in state funds that's spent on these settlements. Assemblymember Zohran Mamdani, the bill's sponsor, describes how it would be enforced.
And so what enforcement would look like is the Attorney General being given the right to sue organizations and individuals who work for those organizations that have been found guilty of financing entities that violate the Geneva Convention.
The bill has received mixed support from constituents and other lawmakers alike. Those who favor it feel it prevents New York from continuing to contribute to unending violence. Lawmakers opposing the bill signed a letter saying it demonizes Jewish charities and is meant to antagonize pro-Israel New Yorkers. Federal officials have voiced concerns about the U.S. providing funds to such groups. In 2010, then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu the U.S. would ban citizen funding for settlements if Israeli occupation didn't end. Though nothing came of this warning, Mamdani says the Internal Revenue Service can tackle this.
The IRS could make it very clear that if you are financing and subsidizing the violation of international law and therefore war crimes, then you are not to be considered a charitable purpose.
In recent years, some federal elected officials have voiced the need for this kind of funding to be withdrawn. In 2021, several congressional lawmakers sent a letter to the Treasury Department calling for the examination of charities supporting illegal settlements in Palestine. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 11 a.m., then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between 11 a.m. and noon. Then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm afternoon, and some of those storms could produce heavy rain. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 76 degrees. On Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly after 1 a.m. Some of those storms could produce heavy rain. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 61 degrees. And on Saturday, a slight chance of showers before 7 a.m., then isolated showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 80 degrees. And Saturday night, mostly clear, with a temperature low of around 59 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.